Before we get to the podcast, I wanted to invite you to the Pipeline Conference. The theme of this year's conference will be succession at every level. The event will be held October 11 through 13 here in Nashville, Tennessee. The focus of this event will be succession all the way from senior leadership at a church to the preschool and even the parking volunteers. That means that this conference is for your whole leadership team and any volunteers who you'd like to join you. Our speakers will include John Piper, Bob Russell, H.B. Charles, Tom Rayner, and more. Again, this event is October 11 through 13 here in Nashville. We will have separate coaching days on October 11 and 13, with the main event being the 12th. These days provide your team a chance to get focused, engaged training from our team. We have early bird discounts running through July 31st, so there's still time to take advantage of these, along with our fantastic group rates if you want to bring your team. Go to myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about the event and to register your team. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com, and don't forget to take advantage of our early bird and group discounts before July 31st.
Welcome to the Five Leadership Questions. I'm your host, Todd Atkins. I feel like I should say, what? Even though...
You shouldn't do that, like, when you introduce yourself.
That's kind of like quoting yourself or something.
Yeah, you don't want
to referring to yourself in the third person.
Retweeting yourself.
Having your now, same music, all those things.
I have... I don't know that I've retweeted myself.
I didn't say you did. I'm just saying it would be like that.
Well... True. Now, Twitter does have a function where you can, like, instead of tweeting the same thing twice, you get one chance to, like, bump it again.
I didn't know.
Is that?
No, that's fine. I guess that's fine. You would know. I don't know.
Fine. You get one humble brag a day, actually.
One humble brag a day. Okay, so the voices that you're hearing are Eric Geiger, who is Boss Daddy, and you are also hearing Kevin Peck, who is Advisory Daddy.
Wow.
Kevin Peck has been with Lifeway Leadership from the very beginning. I've been here 4.5 years, and he was one of the first people I tapped to say, hey, we're opening up a new department, a new ministry area at Lifeway, and I want you to be in and help guide that from the very beginning. So I'm really excited to have both of you here. And one of the reasons is because you have a new book called Designed to Lead. And it is one of the most practical, well laid out books to be able to actually apply it. So many things are theory. So many things are full of vision and inspiration and encouragement. This is a little bit of that, but it is taking that vision and saying, okay, how do we actually deliver on the dream? And I love that aspect of the book. So this whole week, we're going to be walking through that book, Designed to Lead. First, we're going to look at the church as a leadership locus, and we'll talk about that in just a minute. But then we'll move into the conviction of a church, the culture of a church, the constructs that you have to put in place. And then finally, how do you put all of that together to actually do the work of the ministry? So first question to you, Eric. What is a leadership locus? This is not like a plague, swarm of bugs from the Old Testament.
I think we want to spell the word, only because when I first mentioned leadership locus before, Kevin and I had it was Kevin's idea initially. Let's call the book Leadership Locus, and I was like, "That's awesome," because we're saying that
because we're nerding out.
Well, we're like, "That's perfect," because leadership we're saying locus. The church is the center. Locus means center, the center of leadership. And so I told our publisher, "Hey, we want to go with Leadership Locus," and Jennifer Lyle, she was like, no, I can't let you do that. I can't let you do it. I said, why? It's awesome. She said, because people are going to think of flying animals, big bugs, locust. And so it's not what we mean. Leadership locus, the word locus means center. And so we are not saying at all that the center of the church should be leadership. We believe that a church is only strong and only healthy and only life-giving if the center of the church is Jesus, the center of the church is what he's done for us, is the gospel. But we are saying that the center of leadership should be the church. So the center of the church is Jesus, but the center of leadership should be the church, that there's no organization or institution that should outpace a local church in developing and deploying leaders, because no other organization, and we're much more than an organization, But no one else has the mission that we have, has the leader that we have in Jesus, has the great promise that we have. So the local church should excel at this, at creating and commissioning people who influence others in all different spheres of life. So the church should be the center of where leadership happens. The center of the church should be Jesus, but the center of where leadership takes place should be the church.
So how have, Kevin, how have you seen that play out in your local church setting?
Yeah, so, you know, for us, one of the things that we look at, and many of us have kind of learned a ton from some of the recent writings of, you know, guys like Tim Keller, who've made statements like the local church shouldn't be against the city. You know, we shouldn't be kind of standing in opposition to them, saying that the city is evil and we're good. And he's also said that we shouldn't be of the city, that we shouldn't be just a local church that's no different than or just synonymous with the ethos and culture of the city. But rather, he's kind of, I think he's articulated in a way that, you know, other theologians have done it, but he's done it in a really clear way that's kind of for a lot of churches locally have begun to say, no, we want to be these churches for the city, that actually we're going to seek the welfare and the peace and we're going to seek the good, the flourishing of our cities. And I think it wouldn't take too much of a stretch of imagination right now in at least the American context to see that our cities have a dearth of leadership, that we're lacking great leaders. And I also don't think it would take much of a stretch for us to imagine what it would look like for the city to have better leaders. I think we know it would be leaders of character. We know it would be leaders who seek others' good and not just their own. We know it would be leaders who care about their subordinates and not just try to take from their subordinates. And all of these kind of leaders are best and maybe only built in the local church of God. And so a church like mine, when we sit there and say, we want to make an impact on our city, we want our city to care that we exist, we want our city to feel that we exist, that means for us that we have to have a deliberate and intentional approach to making the very leaders that they need. And so for us, that means a deliberate and intentional ministry towards building leaders who will not only just lead in our doors and lead in our ministries, but preparing them to lead in the marketplace, preparing them to lead in their communities, preparing them to lead in their homes for the glory of God. There's research that says 70% of leadership acumen is transferable from context to context. And we buy it and we believe it. And so because of that, our local church is really planning and strategizing towards that end so that we can bless our city.
So, Eric, what role has the church historically played in developing leaders in the community? So go all the way back to the beginning.
So you want to go back 2,000 years?
Sure, just cover that in the next 2 minutes. 2,000 years and 2 minutes of how the church historically played a role in developing leaders. Go.
There, you know, there's volumes written on this, and here's...
If you could refrain from using words like dearth, that would be great.
There's a dearth and plethora.
I had no idea that there was like an age gradation of the level of vocabulary allowed on this.
No, a lot of our people are NASB readers, so it's okay.
Todd likes to keep things a little simple, you know.
I didn't know. I'll refrain from polysyllabic vocabulary.
There's tons and tons written. There's actually a lot written on the subject, but if you want to think about in terms of big segments of history, really when the church began, there really was a leadership development in the culture of the local church, and many would say it's because Jesus entered into a rabbi culture. He entered into a culture where he would ask disciples to follow him for several years and invest his life in them. And so the origin of the Christian faith, Jesus stepped into a culture that discipleship and walking alongside people and investing in them. And then many historians would say that when the center of the church moved from Jerusalem to Rome, that we lost a lot, because then it became less about discipleship and rabbis inviting people to live alongside them, but it became more scholastic, where you sat forward and heard from someone who downloaded a bunch of information into you, but didn't develop you for all of life. And then obviously, you know that there's the dark ages where people would live vicariously through the priest who would offer, who would take communion for the people even. I mean, that you sat and watched and did nothing. So leadership development was horrid during that time. And then you have the Reformation where not only it was the belief really heralded that we are His only by grace through faith, but you also have Martin Luther saying things like, all of us are priests, every single person, every single believer. There's no difference between us. Every one of us is a priest. And so you started seeing ministry handed back to the people. And so depending on who you ask, some would say that we haven't made the Reformation hasn't fully happened because we still have some of that taking place in our churches today, where ministry is held by a select few instead of handed to the masses. But then we have healthy cases where local churches are handing ministry to the masses, and it's not centralized or localized to a couple of individuals. I don't know, Kevin, you've done a lot of research on this, even for formal education. Did I sum that up, or you want to add anything there?
Yeah, no, I mean, I love actually kind of walking through the history of leadership development. I think we're at a unique place right now. I think kind of post, at least for Reformation forward, I think there was like the seed of an idea that we're all, you know, the priesthood of all believers becomes the seed of an idea that that not just the guy at the front of the church, but the church as a community of God's people empowered by God's Spirit, all of us are to play a role in causing the work of God and the image of God to flourish across the world. I think that was a started deal. And then I think as we kind of move forward to more modern history, I think the kind of like post-Christian ethos that's come into the Western world, at least, has kind of depowered our leadership development efforts as we kind of begin to split the sacred and the secular, as has happened in at least the last 100 years in Western thinking, where we separated theology from philosophy. I think we found ourselves saying, what does the church have to do with leadership thinking? And I think that's been a problem. Whereas if you look in the Eastern part of the world at the moment, leadership development is happening corely in the Church of God because they haven't made that separation between the sacred and the secular to their advantage in developing leaders.
Good. Well, let's get to question number three then. Eric, how is the church uniquely designed to develop leaders?
Well, the church is the people of God, so we have the Spirit of God. So every believer is gifted. Every believer is gifted by the Spirit. Every believer is on mission. They may not realize it, but we've been invited into the mission of Jesus. And that mission is to take the gospel to people from every single tribe, tongue, and nation. So we're continually gathering more people from all different spheres of life. So no one else has that. No one else has the Spirit of God, the mission of God, and people from every single tribe, tongue, and nation that are being gathered. So That is extremely unique. What the church has, what the church has to offer the world is extremely unique.
Word.
I mean, you're looking at me with those weird eyes like, Eric, say more. But I can just start, I can keep talking, but I thought I answered the question. Why are you looking at me like I'm not saying enough?
I know that you would say, you know, we're not just called to be disciples, we're called to make disciples.
Oh, now you're trying to feed me things you want me to say.
No, well, it's something that I want to say more than anything else.
Yes, that's true.
If Barnabas was here, he'd be serving up me questions too.
Yeah.
So, and I can't serve myself up questions, can I? Todd, what would you say about?
I don't know. That's good. You some kind of way figure out how to do it on Twitter.
Oh, that's true. Twitter's a whole different animal. Kevin, what would you add or take away to that?
Please don't take anything away.
No, I wouldn't take anything away at all. No, I mean, there's just so much to add here. And I think one of the things that I would just kind of add is...
See, he said there's so much to add.
Yeah, there's so much to add, of course. And I think Eric's just being generous and not wanting to kind of take all the mic time from you, Todd. You know, he's just leaving it open. What I would say that I find one of the more compelling things, and we could say more if we want to after this, but one of the more compelling things is the church is kind of uniquely designed to develop leaders because it actually has They actually have the blueprints for how humans are designed to move and to flourish. That's something unique about us. Humanity was designed to flourish under servant leadership. We were designed to flourish under self-sacrifice and leadership. We're designed to flourish when the people out in front of us who are designed to take us place are bent towards the good of those who follow. And there's just no other institution like the local church who, because of our following Jesus and his example, and being discipled by him and being grown by him, being conformed to his image, they're going to produce that kind of leader. And so in some ways, because of the fact that the Christian church is being shaped to look more and more like the one that God designed people to follow, then we have this unique place in making leaders, because we're working towards the kind of leaders God intended men and women to follow. And so there's just a real uniqueness to that, because we, as it were, have the blueprint for how sheep are designed to follow a leader. And so as we make shepherds in the image, as it were, of the great shepherd, Jesus Christ, then we're going to make the best leaders the world has to see.
So I love I love what you said earlier about the separation, or we put a separation back into the sacred and the secular when that has been torn apart. How does that exhibit itself in good and bad leadership?
Yeah, you know, I think when you look at you know, a sacred and secular divide, you find yourself kind of having this discussion, like, where does my work life balance? How does that get dealt with? How do we deal with people who are leading poorly because of life choices? How do we deal with leaders who we say, hey, what you do at home doesn't matter here at work? And I think that ideal is a failed experiment that the world now sees. We now realize that if somebody has wickedness in their heart that's left unchecked, they could lead these great corporations. But what we've seen is they fall apart in the end, and they destroy people in the end. And so we find ourselves kind of seeing that when you take those sacred things, which is when we start talking about things of character and soul and heart, and we try to separate those from secular things like productivity and efficiency and all these things, what we're going to find ourselves is we know the church can't do it, but the reality is we're going to see that when the world tries to do it even, they're going to find themselves sorely despairing of the results that they get. And I think that's on the – at least it's on the Western consciousness right now, that there is a great – I think there's a great dilemma in leadership right now. People are beginning to resist the very idea of leadership because they just are – they've just been so so bent by the failure of leaders. They mistrust them. They just assume that there's going to be deceit or character flaws. And so ultimately, leadership is an issue of trust. And when you separate the sacred and the secular, it's nigh unto impossible to actually have leadership that can have any kind of trust.
So I've been thinking a lot lately about...
You've been thinking?
Yeah.
It's awesome.
It happens on occasion. I've been thinking a lot about our friends that, you know, we went to seminary with, or we started ministry with, or, you know, served somewhere along the way, and guys that we thought never in a million years will this guy get shot out of the saddle. Right. And they continue to do so left and right. And I'm beginning to.
When you're from Kentucky, so when you mean shot out of the saddle, I mean, we do have, you know, I moved here from Miami. I mean, Kevin's in Texas.
He's in Texas.
He gets it. But you mean that they have fallen shot. So if you're shot out of the saddle, that means you're no longer on the horse. So that would mean, I mean, I had to do a couple mental workouts to get to the conclusion. I believe you were saying if you're shot out of the saddle, you're no longer on the horse, therefore you're out of the game.
You're out of the game.
And you're not currently serving in ministry.
Right.
Okay. So that's what you meant. Okay.
When I'm saying you are no longer leading.
Got it.
In the church.
All right. It's cool. I mean, it's not cool, but I'm just being sure I understand.
No, it's not cool at all.
But I'm being sure I understand the illustration.
Well, and so what I'm wrestling with, and what I'm wrestling with is we grew up hearing about healthy boundaries. And I'm wondering if boundaries are, if we're even supposed to have them, or have we misapplied them and created compartmentalization of our lives as ministers? Because when life is work and work is life and life is ministry, I mean, and all those things are ministry, I don't know that you have as many problems. What do you think?
So I definitely think when you, Kevin, to bring up the sacred secular dichotomy in terms of leadership development, in terms of how it causes people to think I act one way at church or my leadership at church has nothing to do with my Monday through Friday, absolutely huge implications. And I do think it has implications for what Kevin's saying, like, okay, I gotta draw these clean lines in my life, and there's home, and there's work, and then there's ministry, but really a more holistic, accurate view would be Jesus is over all of that and changes me in all of that. I don't want to unintentionally send the signal, though, that I shouldn't have boundaries and care for my own soul and my family and not be a workaholic, right? But what I think we've learned with people falling off their horse, or I'm sorry, getting kicked out of the saddle, however you framed it,
shot out of the saddle,
is that having all those cleanly lined up on paper isn't what solves the problem. What solves a problem is not, I'm going to spend X amount of time in this bucket, X amount of time in this bucket. And so that hasn't solved the issue.
Right. And not even allowing your community to cross those lines, I think, is incredibly problematic because, I mean, humans are by nature integrated beings. And so we have so many of our believers who have real faith crisis issues. But at work, it's work. So when they're sitting in a cubicle, the division of the sacred and secular means for a lot of these guys that they can't say, I'm fighting temptation here. I'm challenged by my faith here, even among other believers. And I think that's a huge problem. And the church has in some ways kind of reinforced that by not helping people to see that their life is an integrated Christian with Jesus Christ over all of it, and that they should operate in some ways with that paradigm, no matter what context they're in. And so you have these folks who they just spend 8 hours a day where they feel like faith it can't be spoken about. It's a personal thing. It's a private thing. And that division where they say, well, that's not a place for that. I mean, there's believers in our churches right now who actually believe that, talking about things of faith is not for them in the workplace. That's not the appropriate place for it. And a lot of that's driving, I think, the culture that allows so many of those people to fail in the marketplace. But even for church leaders, so many church leaders, I'm watching and witnessing in this moment as leaders find themselves kind of categorizing the people around them in kind of a classic employment situation rather than saying, it's necessary for me to live a life that's open and transparent, talk about my actual personal faith instead of just being kind of a corporation church that just talks about the faith and not our faith together. And so I think most guys that you'll find that have kind of been booted out of the saddle or shot out of the saddle or whatever, so I think most of those guys will tell you they felt exceedingly alone.
Because
their personal faith wasn't meant to be brought to bear inside the offices of the church, which if you look at that, something is being done in the church where everyone believes that, the pastor, the people out in cubicles in the marketplace, moms at home, something is happening in the church that is creating this dichotomy that says there's a time for spiritual things and there's a time for secular things like work, and I think it's bled back into the church. So I think somehow or another we created that culture out of the church, but now that's kind of fed back into the church, the very church leaders themselves who now feel like they're in an office surrounded by pastors, but can't talk about issues like sin and repentance. Mm.
Well, I think that's a really good segue into our last question, which is how can churches become this kind of leadership locus for all of life and culture?
It has to begin with conviction. It has to start with the role of a ministry leader. The role of a church is to make disciples. The role of a ministry leader is to develop and equip others, equip and train others for ministry. So it's got to begin with, for a church to be a leadership locus where there's not a false dichotomy between secular and sacred, there's got to be conviction for that. It's got to start with conviction.
Kevin?
Yeah, I think just as Eric kind of pointed out, it starts with conviction, and I think it leads to the actions that are necessary to say, this is going to be something I fight for. So it's implicit in what we mean by the word conviction, but I think it's necessary to just draw it out a bit. For the church to be the kind of church that's going to develop leaders, the church leadership has to decide that success is impossible without it being done. That it's not just another thing to add on, but rather that if we don't do it, then we fail. And until it becomes that, there's no chance to go from where we are today with a lack of leadership development to where we want to go tomorrow, where the church becomes the very center where the city just can't wait for us to send out more leaders to help lead our cities.
Excellent. Well, I think that's it for today. So we've covered church as a leadership locus, and tomorrow we will be unpacking what that conviction looks like and how do you create that conviction.
Thank you for listening to the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. Don't forget to visit myleadershippipeline.com to learn more about our fall conference, October 11 through 13 here in Nashville, and to take advantage of our early bird and group discounts. Again, that's myleadershippipeline.com, and the early bird deadline is July 31st, so move quickly to take advantage of these discounts.